Hello, everyone. Today's episode is the first in our trilogy about the great Saint Teresa of Avila. This is a story that I have written that includes pieces from her childhood, her time in the convent, as well as one of her best-known mystical experiences. So I hope that this serves as a good appetizer before we start really delving into the great work and the great mind of Teresa of Avila. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. In the village of Avila, under a shady tree, little Teresa marveled at all of the stones that she had stacked. They were carefully placed one on top of the other, forming a wall about 3 feet high, just about as tall as she was. Some were smooth, some rough, some big, some small. She was proud and pleased with her work. The look on her face was excited but also mischievous, as she instructed her little brother Rodrigo on what to do next. "Today, Rodrigo, we are going to be hermits, and these stones will be the walls to our hermitages. And these sticks," she said, pointing to another nearby stacked pile, "will make the roof of our huts. And my favorite, Rodrigo, are these." She then pulled two blankets from behind the stones, blankets that she obviously took from the family clothesline. "These blankets will be our habits, because you can't be a monk without the proper attire. But before we put these on, Rodrigo, we have to build our huts." Little Teresa then went on to instruct her brother on the ins and outs of hermitage construction, as if she had been working construction her entire 8 years of life on this planet. She explained to her little brother how to stack the stones the right angles to place the rocks so they don't topple over. She instructed him on how to lay the sticks, and then she promised, "Once we complete our hermitages, then I will teach you how to be a hermit." Teresa and Rodrigo then spent the rest of the afternoon stacking stones around themselves. But inevitably, the stones would just topple onto them. As the little kids hurriedly tried to fortify their structures, they still kept falling over. Once or twice, Teresa built what she thought was a very sturdy hut around Rodrigo, but as soon as she put the sticks on top to form the roof, poor Rodrigo would be covered in rocks and sticks and stones. And he would yell out playfully, Teresa scared that someone would hear. Little Rodrigo, finally having enough of his bossy big sister, demanded that it would be his turn to build a wall around Teresa. One, he thought he was a better mason than Teresa, but also he wanted the chance to see Teresa trapped under the rubble for a change. Though Teresa insisted, since she was older, she would construct the wall around him. This led to an argument, the two going back and forth, and before they knew it, they felt hands under their arms yanking them upright. It was their nanny who, trying to sound stern while holding back laughter, said, Teresita, what are you doing to your poor baby brother this time? She's trying to bury me alive. The nanny, holding back laughter again from this outburst, Teresa, please stop trying to bury Rodrigo alive. I wasn't, she said. We were being hermits. Well, the nanny said, can we be hermits without using the bed linens? Come on, the nanny said. Let's get you two washed up. She then scooped up Rodrigo in her arms and took Teresa by her hand, smiling for being part of yet another adventure of Teresa and Rodrigo. That night, Teresa's father's voice could be heard sternly but lovingly booming throughout the halls. Teresa, he said, I heard about your brief interest in masonry this afternoon. I also heard you dirtied the bedsheets and your little brother got buried with rocks. What's going on here, darling? Last week, he said, you took Rodrigo into town because you wanted to go and fight the Moors in Jerusalem. You stopped into a shop and asked the shopkeeper for sweets for your journey. You told him you wanted to glorify the Kingdom of Spain. And you said, if all fails, at least you and your 4-year-old brother would be martyrs. Teresa, what's going on? Fortunately, in that instance, Nanny Maria followed you the whole way and walked you back home. You still got sweets, so good for you. But now you're building hermitages. What is it, Teresa? Is this because of your brothers? Is it because you miss them? I don't just miss them, Father, it's more than that. Then what is it, Teresa? Hernando, Lorenzo, Juan, she said, they get to go and be conquistadors, they get to go and travel, I want to see the world, I want to build the Kingdom of Spain like they are. Oh, Teresa, you're only 8 years old, there is plenty of time for you to accomplish your dreams. But I can never be a conquistador, she said. I can never fight for Spain. Her father folds his arms and turns his head and looks at Teresa and lovingly sighs. What? She asks. He then lunges forward, picks up his daughter, tickling her and spinning her as she playfully screams. Giving her a big kiss on the head, he says, Teresa, my love, you are destined for things even greater than the Kingdom of Spain. Like what? I don't know what, but I know God has wonderful things planned for you. Just be patient. So no more running off, and please no more burying Rodrigo alive. I wasn't burying him alive, she said. Yes, she was, a small distant voice yelled from the hallway. Of course, Teresa would not grow up to become a conquistador. But her father was right. God did have even greater things planned for her. Her work would not include building castles on earth or even stony hermitages, but instead, she would restore the castles that are intrinsically found within the souls of God's children. And instead of traveling the world glorifying the Kingdom of Spain, she would become God's mason, traveling the world, restoring his kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Teresa was kneeling on the hard, bare wooden floor in her convent cell. She could feel the bruises starting to form on her knees, and her hands were clasped so hard in prayer that her knuckles were turning white. She had joined the Carmelite Order of Nuns for their easygoing approach to religious life, but she had soon realized that their easygoing approach to God led to an absence of God in their life and in their community. Teresa quickly became well known in the community as a holy woman and later Mother Superior to a series of convents. She was recognized in the poorer circles for her work as a servant to those in need, but also in the rich circles as a charming nun who could easily charm her way into hefty donations. She was also known by the Pope himself, who approved Teresa's mission to reform the Carmelites, to get rid of these lax practices and institute an order that enacted penance, community prayer, and true sacrifice. So, why was this respected woman on her knees crying before God? Because despite her prestige, despite her accolades, despite being a nun for over 20 years, at this moment she could not feel God anymore. Where are you? She would say, rocking back and forth with her white hands gripping the crucifix that laid around her neck. Her body had become stricken by the effects of malaria, and she never fully recovered from it. She also began to suffer from seizures, which would make her arms and legs go completely numb. Pains of her body stopped her from prayer. And because of this, she felt guilty. And because she stopped praying, she felt and assumed, that's why God abandoned me. Where have you gone, my God? She cried. Where are you? She shouted passionately in her cell, looking up at a simple crucifix seeing the dark, sunken eyes of a small bronze Christ looking down at her. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? I'm sorry for abandoning you, but I know you would never abandon me. This excuse of bodily weakness, God, is no excuse for me to not serve you in prayer. Oh God, for prayer requires no physical strength. Even if my arms fail to work, if my hands fail to clasp, if my knees fail to bend, my heart and mind, they still will pray for you. My heart and mind will still exist only for you. I have used excuses to hide. Oh God, please have mercy on me. Return to me. She then groggily stood up, feeling her newly bruised knees buckle, and she collapsed onto her desk. In a fit of frustration, she knocked over the books and pens and hurried for the door. Limping along the way, holding herself up by the hallway walls, not caring if her sisters even saw her run or heard her cry. She ran as quickly as her broken body would allow, and she ran directly into the chapel. And she threw herself down. She threw herself down out of frustration of her failing body, but she also threw herself down out of frustration for a God that she can no longer feel. And she looked up. She looked up to see an icon that mirrored the Stations of the Cross. And as she looked up, she realized that she was in front of the icon of Christ falling for the first time, the third station of the cross. I have fallen, O God, much like you have fallen. Allow me to fall, because I am going to fall over and over. But allow me to rise. Allow me to rise so I can meet my eventual death, that I can meet the death of my brokenness. And to rise anew in your arms. Have mercy on me, O God. Teresa, sweet voice echoed, a voice of a woman. Is this a sister? Couldn't be. They would not address a mother superior that way. Who was it? She looked up and saw a woman kneeling beside her, also with tears streaming down her face, a familiar face, but Teresa could not remember how she knew this woman. She was not dressed in a nun's habit, and Teresa was too upset to even fully react, other than to accept this woman's consolation. As the woman helped Teresa up and held Teresa in her arms, it was then she realized who this was. Because an icon of this woman was right in front of her. It was the same woman pictured at the foot of the cross in the 12th station, the woman who was consoling the Virgin Mary. And now she was consoling Teresa. This mysterious woman was none other than Saint Mary Magdalene. And not a word was shared between the two women, only tears. Only understanding, and only love. We do not know the additional experiences shared between Mary Magdalene and Teresa. But we do know that there were other glimpses of the divine that Teresa had, not only of Mary Magdalene, but after rededicating herself to a life of prayer, Teresa experienced other inner voices and divine visions. Teresa's visions and ecstatic experiences grew more frequently and also more public. She was still well known and loved. She had traveled the entire country of Spain, starting new convents, even starting a new reformed order for Carmelite men under her protege John. She was increasingly recognized as this incredible administrator, servant, and mother superior. However, her visions and messages from God were stopping her from doing this important work. It was getting to the point where her mission was becoming more complicated, if not impossible. She was also becoming a distraction for her sisters, who sought a community life rather than a mother superior who was making a big show of her spirituality. The fact that these experiences were becoming so much more intense, they stopped her from doing her work. She went to a series of spiritual advisors for advice. "You're deluded," one notable priest said. "It's impossible for a mere human to experience these things. These are demons trying to trick you," a substitute for her normal confessor said. "Ignore them and make the sign of the cross." "You're experiencing divine graces," one priest said, "but ignore them." This proved useless, though. The visions and experiences still occurred, this time even more intensely. "The Spirit of God is working through you," another one said. "Just don't seek out these experiences, but let them come." While this was a better piece of advice, it wasn't very helpful. "Others will say this is the devil," Avila's new spiritual director, Father Balthazar Alvarez, said. "They say this because these people do not have the same gifts that you have. Prophecy and experiences such as this, are these not the fruits of the Holy Spirit, Teresa? Let's find a middle ground. Do not communicate with these apparitions and voices as much as you are now. But let's still see what God has in store for you. Recite the Veni Creator Spiritus daily to invoke the Holy Spirit, who will guide you through all of this." Finally, receiving level-headed advice that seemed to fit the ebbs and flows of her experiences, Teresa took the words of Father Alvarez to heart. A few weeks later, while praying the Veni Creator Spiritus, Teresa heard the voice of God again. "Beloved Teresa," God said, "do not listen to these men, these priests, who want to deny you these graces from me. I will not have you hold conversations with men, Teresa, but instead, from here on out, I will have you hold conversations with angels." And eventually God's words would come into fruition for Teresa of Avila. One night, as she rested in prayer, a prayer in which she called the prayer of the loving gaze, a prayer that solely consisted of looking upon God lovingly and feeling his love and gaze wash over you. During this prayer, Teresa saw an angel. Up until this point, Teresa only saw angels in her mind, something that was hard for her to verbalize. But this time, the angel was there. The angel was small rather than large and radiantly beautiful. It appeared in the form of a man standing at her left side. His face was brightly shining so bright that Teresa instantly knew that this was a seraph angel, the same type of angel that gave Saint Francis his stigmata. The same angels who are known as the shining ones who sit closest to the throne of God. The angels who are constantly on fire with divine love. And now, this angel was there with her. In the angel's hand was a long dart, and at the end of the dart, the end of the spear, there was something that was shining brightly. Teresa was not sure what this was, but she could not stop looking at its brightness. At that moment, before Teresa could even process what was fully going on, the angel thrust the spear into her heart. He did this in such a way that it passed through her completely, through her lungs, her bowels. The angel thrust the spear in her time and time again, and each time he withdrew it, Teresa felt more and more on fire. A painful fire, but a cleansing fire. And while she felt the excruciating fire on her skin and the pain inside of her body, she also felt a fire within her soul. and with each thrust into her skin, each thrust into her organs, the fire only increased, leaving Teresa of Avila wholly on fire with a great love of God, a love that remained with her until her death over 40 years later. And while we do not know what Teresa thought or where she was transported to while the angel repeatedly impaled her with a spear, I like to think that she was transported back to the village of Avila. There, she was a small child again, sitting across from the father, who leapt up, spinning her around as she laughed and screamed. Getting close to her, the father, but this time an even greater father, gets in close to his child and says, "Teresa, my love, you have been destined for such great things, destined for a kingdom even greater than Spain." Thank you for listening to another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue. I have been your host, W. Make sure to tune in next week as we start to uncover the incredible life of Teresa and what we can learn from her work and her legacy. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you are destined for a kingdom more great than any on this earth. Take care.